Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Abba Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast. So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at something a bit different, actually. It's a diary entry.
Mm-hmm. Penned by someone called Ricky Zakari.
Right. And it's not just, you know, random thoughts. It's structured. It details their journey reading this very specific book.
A book aimed at people dealing with, well, pretty heavy stuff. Loss, betrayal.
Exactly. So our mission today is to kind of unpack that diary entry. We want to pull out the core insights, the sort of survival rules, if you like, that Ricky Zakari found in that book.
Yeah, it's like getting a distilled guide to navigating trauma and rebuilding based on this one person's reflective experience, a shortcut to the wisdom.
Okay, let's unpack this. Where does it start? Ricky Zakari highlights the book's dedication, interestingly enough. Not the first chapter, but the dedication.
That really stood out.
Yeah.
It seems the power wasn't immediately in the advice, but in feeling seen.
Seen how?
Well, the dedication apparently spoke directly to the wounds of trust. It acknowledged that pain, but also the flicker of hope amidst shadows.
Right, so just naming it.
Exactly. For someone in that valley of betrayal, as the source puts it, that initial validation is huge. It's like saying, yes, this is real, and it's incredibly hard.
And you're saying that's more than just like a comforting sentence. It does something functional.
Oh, absolutely. It reframes the struggle instantly. Instead of feeling weak or alone, the book honored the sheer courage it takes just to keep going.
The courage to question, to lament.
To lament, exactly. Yeah. And even to seek growth in the middle of it all. It creates what the diary calls a tapestry of strength and vulnerability. It tells you implicitly, you're not alone in this deep hurt.
Okay, so that's the foundation. Acknowledgement first. Then the book, according to the diary, lays out a kind of path.
A structured one.
Yeah.
Ricky Zakari describes it almost like a sacred journey, chapter by chapter, which when you feel lost, structure is incredibly helpful.
And there are distinct stages.
Three main ones, yes. First, really exploring the landscape of loss and betrayal, getting clear on what actually happened, the impact.
Sort of mapping the damage.
In a way, yes. An honest inventory, emotionally and intellectually.
Then comes stage two. This sounds intense. Delving into the depths of lament and resilience.
Mm-hmm. This is where the deep emotional work happens.
But how do you avoid just, you know, getting stuck there, wallowing in the lament? Does the diary touch on that?
That's a really important point. The source seems to frame lament not as passive sadness, but as necessary, active engagement with grief.
Active lament.
Yes. It's the processing through the pain, not around it, that builds resilience. The diary suggests the book presents it as a crucial step to avoid getting stuck or pretending things are okay.
Okay, so it's functional grief in a sense. It prevents regression.
Precisely. It's the work that allows you to eventually move forward authentically.
Which leads to stage three, rebuilding trust and foundations. This is the forward-looking part.
Right, caving the path ahead. But crucially, it's how that path is paved. The diary emphasizes this synthesis of ideas.
Synthesis, what kind?
This is really interesting. It wasn't just psychology or just theology. Ricky Zakari noted the book intertwined theological roots with psychological echoes.
Ah, so blending meaning and mechanism.
You could put it that way, yeah. It offers a richer understanding by drawing on both. It acknowledges the complexities of faith and trauma together.
So how might that play out practically for someone trying to recover? What does that blend actually look like on the ground?
Well, think about it. The psychological side might give you tools, like techniques for managing anxiety triggers or setting healthy boundaries.
Right? Okay, practical coping skills.
Yes, but the theological or faith perspective might offer a larger framework for meaning. Ideas like redemption or finding purpose even in suffering, or, you know, forgiveness.
So it helps integrate the trauma into your life story rather than letting it just be this destructive force.
Exactly. It elevates the experience from just survival to something potentially meaningful, even transformative. It makes the recovery framework more robust, more enduring.
That makes sense. Now, the diary apparently pivots to something tricky, this internal conflict the author felt.
Yes, a real point of tension. Ricky Zachary reflected quite a bit on this delicate balance.
Between what?
Primarily between personal healing, like finding inner peace, and the push for external justice, like accountability for the betrayal.
Okay. And also between that personal healing and maybe what the wider community needs or expects.
Precisely. That tension between personal healing and community restoration. They aren't always aligned.
Why is that balance so hard, though? Can't you just pursue both?
Well, sometimes their demands pull in opposite directions. Seeking justice might require confrontation, holding people accountable, actions that stir things up externally.
Right, which might disrupt your inner peace.
Exactly. While personal healing often involves things like acceptance, maybe letting go of the need for an apology, focusing inward, self-forgiveness even.
I see. So different needs, different actions.
And the source is valuable because it doesn't pretend this conflict isn't real. It validates it. It makes you ask consciously, what am I prioritizing right now? Repairing relationships and community, or securing my own internal stability?
That raises an important question, doesn't it? How does your own recovery journey fit, or maybe clash, with the people around you?
It forces a conscious negotiation. It's not always easy, but acknowledging the tension is the first step to navigating it.
So once you're aware of that tension, maybe making some choices there,
right.
What does the diary say helps keep the momentum going, sustaining the growth?
Yeah, how do you stop from sliding back? The diary highlights that the book discussed sustaining growth and hope quite practically.
Not just abstract ideas.
No, specific practices. Mm-hmm. Things that actively maintain resilience because it's not a one-time fix.
Like what practices did Ricky Zachary mention?
Key ones were gratitude, actively focusing on the good, which reframes your perspective daily.
Okay.
Presence anchoring yourself in the now, rather than getting lost in past trauma or future anxiety.
Grounding techniques, essentially.
You could say that. And significantly, the importance of support systems. The diary specifically mentions faith communities.
So external support is critical. He called them agents of healing and transformation.
Exactly. You don't do this alone. When your inner world is still shaky, these external structures, whether it's a faith group, therapy, trusted friends, they provide stability, accountability even.
Like scaffolding while you rebuild.
That's a great way to put it. Rebuilding trust, especially, requires practice in a safe space, often with others. Transformation is often relational.
So as Ricky Zachary finished the book in this reflection, what was the feeling? The diary mentioned something about feeling both heavy and light.
Yes, both heavy with the weight of the journey and light with the hope of forward movement. It captures that feeling of having processed something profound, but seeing a path ahead.
And the synthesis of faith and psychology we talked about, that was key to this final feeling.
Absolutely. It offered that unified understanding. But it didn't stop there. The book apparently ended with a final crucial instruction.
Oh, what was that?
A clear call to ethical action and community impact.
Okay, so moving outwards again. From personal healing to contributing something.
Exactly. It connects back to that tension between personal healing and community restoration we discussed earlier.
How does ethical action fit in after betrayal? What does that look like?
It means taking your experience, your healing, your newfound strength, and channeling it constructively. Maybe it's advocating for change so others don't suffer the same way.
Or setting healthy boundaries in your community.
Or simply living out the values like honesty, integrity that were violated by the betrayal. It's about tuning personal pain into a positive legacy, however small. It's that invitation to live with hope and purpose.
And for Ricky Zachary, this resulted in a renewed sense of purpose.
Yes, and a deeper grasp of healing's complexities. Plus, this profound gratitude for the resilience we all potentially have. The diary frames the whole journey as a testament to hope, growth, and resilience.
So what does this all mean for you, listening? We've walked through this diary, this map of recovery. We saw the crucial first step of acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm. The active work of lament, not just passive sadness.
The power of blending different frameworks like psychology and faith for deeper meaning.
And that really tough negotiation between your own healing path and the needs or demands of justice and community.
But the biggest takeaway, perhaps?
I think it's the power of that synthesis. Complex trauma often needs more than one approach. Integrating practical coping tools with deeper meaning-making frameworks. That seems to be the key to lasting resilience offered here.
And it all leads to that final call.
Yeah, that call to ethical action and community impact. So maybe the thought to leave you with is this. Reflect on that tension we discussed. If your personal healing and the restoration of your community are in this delicate balance.
And you've maybe found some renewed purpose through your own journey.
What's one concrete ethical action, maybe something small, maybe bigger, that you could take? Something that honors both your own hard-won peace and contributes positively to the community around you.
That balancing act, that conscious choice.
That's the ongoing work. That's resilience in action.